Welcome all. If I could get a motion to approve the minutes from March 19th.
Second it.
Discussion. All in favor of the minutes, Dave?
Aye.
There you go. We're going to skip down to 151. I know the deputy controller's here, and he's probably very anxious to get out of here tonight.
Well, you're probably going to talk on 10 also.
You want to talk on 10 to Evan?
I'm here.
Okay. So I don't have to take this out of order? You sure? Okay. We're going to go to 10, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 2 of 18. That's amending local law number 5 of 1991, a hotel motel occupancy tax, to update the tax law application to short-term and vacation rentals.
I'll move it.
Second.
Now,
the sponsor is here.
Joe, do you want to talk about this? I was under the impression that the county exec had something going on, and
yep.
We were going to...
So the last laws and rules, I mentioned that I pushed this off a month and reach out to Mr. Cornell. I did that after a meeting a week or two ago. He told me he'd need 10 weeks to get me any information. I'd like to remind everybody that we were also told, I believe, in laws and rules, that Bert was going to explain to us the process at which now they are trying to gather, trying to go one by one and develop relationships to collect this tax. I don't think any, John, I don't know if they've ever explained it to you, but it was never explained to me how they go about doing that. It appeared that they just were looking up, kind of Googling ads online. And the other thing we were asking for was a list or a ballpark figure. We were told it was confidential, some aspect of it, but they we were told by the execs people as well that they were encapsulating quite a bit of the people out there that are using the Airbnb platforms and other like it. I never got that. I know we asked for it a couple of times. Did you ever get any kind of a number on how many they had done on their own?
Yeah, so I don't have still much of an understanding of what they were doing or have been doing. I have a better understanding of what the executive is now proposing the strategy would be, and that is to go through a third-party service that acquires all the information on short-term rentals, and not just through one platform, but through the array of many different online platforms that they now are on. And I believe that's around, again, this is, you know, I believe this is what I remember was about a $25,000 contract. And through that contract, we also get an online portal, which will be like, you know, a one-stop spot for those who use Airbnb to register. It'll have all the information and all that kind of stuff. In turn, the county will also then open up that information, that data that is collected and received through this third party, to the individual town should they choose to request it. There still have to be an intermunicipal agreement to get that data, but it'd be free of charge. Therefore, then the town, I know both supervisors in Hurley and town of Woodstock that I represent, you know, are excited about this because for a small town, it's, you know, not very, it's very expensive for them to go out to a third party. It's not for their budgets. So, you know, this is a very welcomed addition, at least from my supervisors. And then, therefore, then they can start getting this data and now look at how they want to go about updating, you know, their zoning and all that kind of stuff that our local municipalities have been facing. So, again, I don't really have what the eye concerns like you did with the current process that they had been doing, but personally, and that's, I feel good about what's been proposed, and that's what I've been told has been proposed.
So they're going to go through Airbnb, this private entity is going to go and talk to the platforms themselves
I don't know exactly.
I believe they data mine.
The same thing we're trying to do manually right now, they're just going to be better at it. So yeah, they're going to gather these lists.
Who is it's a third party?
The Utah-based
organization.
And then
what
they're
they?
Going
Air
to,
cloud.
And then we're going to then start reaching out the same way we are, except we'll have a better list rather than just Bird on his computer Googling ads.
I'm going to go Dave and then Hector. And
could
then
you, yeah, I'd like to ask the deputy controller, you know about this third party group?
They were not one of the groups that we had preliminary contact with. We have reached out or at least been contacted by a few similar services who were also a little concerned as to the kind of the procurement process is moving at the speed of light with this out-of-town agency that potentially a better deal could construct for more services.
So what is your take on this third-party group?
I don't know.
No, then okay.
Not had any contact.
All right, because I was wondering. All right, and you know, I know that you know we've been keep putting this thing off and off and off. I mean, I know I proposed it over 2 years ago, and we left a lot of money on the table over the time. You know, it was actually a proposal by the comptroller to do that, and I sponsored with the legislature, and we're continuing to leave money on the table, and several counties have already done this, and now first they're saying that, oh, well, we're going to be doing it, we're data mining ourselves, and now we're not data mining ourselves, we're going to have some third-party data mine. But, I mean, I have some concerns with, you know, why this is being obstructed, if that's the case. But, I mean, I'm a little baffled by it at points.
Hector and then Joe.
So two things, and I guess this is sort of a positive, negative situation, I guess. From at least my supervisor and my mayor, there were concerns about this with regards to enforceability, with regards to examining those rentals. Clearly, once we sort of know about them, whether or not they're actually being inspected, and then basically who's sort of paying for that.
Hector,
to address Dave's point, though, Dave, just through the chair to our council, I mean, this was a legal issue, wasn't it? I mean, like, wasn't that one of the holdups, or no?
As far as the procurement of the information?
No. I mean this. The
local law number two.
The local law number whatever. Sorry, I got the wrong one. 10.
The preemption issue.
There was a preemption issue. That was something we addressed, I think, at length.
There's been a whole bunch of memos that we've
done. Since you were involved in it, that's why I was just so we can get clarity.
Sure. I mean, I think there is a preemption issue. I don't think that issue has been extinguished.
Years ago, and why I understand that it wasn't done, was because of a legal a technicality in the way the state law is written. We would have been one of the first counties back then. We were deterred through legal advice. Now we have 20 counties doing exactly this. And exactly this.
Okay.
And a couple of years ago, we're told we would do this. This makes sense, but it's not legal. Now 20 other counties do it. From what I understand, they're all getting kind of the nod from the state attorney general in the state saying, go ahead and act on this. I brought this up at a taxation panel I don't know if I can't even refer to Jim unless I go through the thing, but Jim was on that taxation panel. 25, 30 different counties in the room, the majority of them there had already done it. Not one negative, not one con. Everybody was getting the tax dollars sent to them. It still seems like this process we're trying to go through here is kind of looking for something else to do, because for the last couple of years we've been sold a bill of goods that wasn't quite something to worry about. With this technicality here, I think we already kind of violated in the county already. It was explained to us before. So I'm comfortable moving forward. Tom, I'd like to remind everybody the lack of information we've gotten from the exec's office over the last couple of months. We were told we were going to get numbers a process explained. Now we were told a couple of weeks ago that they had this foolproof plan. We're hearing towns have issues with it, liability issues. That and then once we get that list, now it's up to our people, who I think Mr. Pennell has mentioned having staffing problems in finance. We're going to have those people now going through thousands of Airbnb and platforms like it, reaching out one by. I mean, they're still going to reach out.
Now they're giving it to the municipalities.
There's no point of going to the third party.
They're not giving it to the municipalities.
If they choose, municipalities.
Not for collection. He's talking about collection.
I'm talking about collection.
The company's going to
so
be
this.
The towns aren't good. The counties.
The counties exactly. Going to be collecting.
But that's what this does. Without all this, I don't know. Like I said, the whole reason we were put off for years was because of a legal issue. That's kind of been put to rest with 20 other counties doing it.
Okay. I mean, again, you know, I've been told by three separate legislative council and minority council and the county attorney that there still exists a legal issue. There still exists a legal issue, so much so that there are still state laws or bills proposed in the Assembly and the Senate to change the state law to allow for a third-party collection. I don't think that the legal issue is extinguished, you know, just because other counties are doing it and the Attorney General is looking the other way. You know, I think that that's, you know, it's sort of like, well, it should be that way, so we'll just, you know, since the state legislature can't get its act together and fix it because of the New York City Hotel Motel Trades Council, you know, they're just going to, you know, the Attorney General is just going to put his hands over his eyes like this and say, okay, collect that money the way that state law doesn't allow you to. It's just something, you know, I can't be a party to, personally.
Dave and NGO.
Well, the thing is I certainly understand that there were legal issues with it, and there may still be legal issues with it, but as Joe pointed out, some 22 counties are collecting it now. My take on it is, I think, you know, collect the money and put it in a fund, you know, put it in a special account that cannot be touched until the legal issues get cleared up. And then, therefore, we either have to take that money and give it back to them, or we can use it for a rainy day fund to fix a bridge down in your district.
Joe,
we don't get any bridges in Kingston.
I think that's what you think about when you talk about maybe doing something like this with when you're looking past you know, some technicality in the law. You talk, what is the liability? What could happen? Could we? I haven't talked to anybody that whether they say yes, technically we're violating that. I'm curious to hear our two councils that are here about this. But would there ever be a situation? What would we be liable for if we were sued? Who would sue us? And what could we potentially lose?
Probably you could be sued. Well, you could be sued by a taxpayer.
Okay? Sure.
So that's who the plaintiff would be. And the potential losses probably would be amounting to whatever taxes have been paid or have been collected. Theoretically, you could probably get a class action going, so you can get a bunch of people together and make the lawsuit. What's the likelihood of that happening? Lawsuits are expensive. They would have to be financed. So, you know, I mean, you could weigh that into it as well. But if you're asking straight theoretically what the potential is, you would probably be seeing a loss. You could see a lawsuit from taxpayers challenging the tax. And technically speaking, if a judge followed the law, the taxpayers would probably succeed.
So, and you'd lose what you got.
Yeah, so Dave's solution of putting it, fees,
besides the legal fees, especially if we didn't fight it, we just gave it back. So we have, 20 to 22 other counties, depending on who I talk to, that have all their constituents, all their taxpayers, and those counties have collected, depending on which county and how many, the Airbnb-type uses there were there. You're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars in each one of those counties that those taxpayers collected, that they got, that we, our Ulster County taxpayers, didn't get because we were told we couldn't do it.
The only thing I'll add, if I may, because
yeah.
I want to give a complete answer. It also occurs to me it's theoretically possible the AG could step in and also bring a lawsuit against
sure.
the county. Obviously, yeah, then you would point that the fact that he hasn't done that with the other 20 counties. So.
Yeah.
But that's possible.
Chris, you agree with all that pretty much?
Or Theoretically, yeah.
Okay.
You can't so really see what's going to happen.
I'd be okay. The important part,
no.
The important part of that question was, what could we lose? We couldn't lose more than we collected, it sounds like, unless it was through legal fees. So why not? If we would have done this 3 years ago, collected it in an account, we'd be sitting on $400,000 or $500,000 that we're now going to go and ask our taxpayers for eventually. You know, it's frustrating. I'm sure it's frustrating for people to hear this stuff.
Jonathan, you got something to add? Then Evan, and then Mr. Malone.
Yeah, I just want to touch on. I mean, firstly, I think if we want to talk about, you know, lost revenue, I think we would. And we want to, you know, make sure we're collecting all the revenue possible if we do this. We're doing so by just having an agreement with just Airbnb versus doing it with a third party that brings in all services. I mean, it's obvious which is going to bring in, you know, the most, you know, revenue for the county. Additionally, I believe I'm totally for, you know, anytime we, especially on this issue, setting funding aside for municipalities, especially as they look to update their zoning laws. But a couple things. First, you know, I know in my community in Woodstock, where it's a huge issue and the town's really, you know, far behind in trying to deal with it. The problem with, we don't even know exactly what the towns need, and the towns themselves, a lot of them don't know what they need because they don't have a scope of the issue without this data. So once they have this data, then they'll actually be able to begin to know what the needs are, and then we could, I'm totally open to having that discussion of how we can be the most supportive. And also, but I believe to do so, that would also take some changes in the fact that through the home rule request and the 2% bed tax, that revenue is directly dedicated to tourism, mm-hmm. I believe, so there would have to be changes. We would have to make changes to redirect and go through that process as well. So, you know, in that sense, at the time, I totally, you know, understand, you know, resolution number 10 and all that, because I share many of your concerns, but I think, you know, the number one goal should be what's the most effective process for the county and also, you know, the users of these short-term rentals. And I think, you know, and what's the most comprehensive. So at this point, I don't see resolution number 10 being the most comprehensive, you know, plan on the table at this point now.
Thank you. Evan, you had something to add?
Yes. Just to reiterate a prior point I've made, is I don't know how we fully reconcile the third-party collections argument when we previously collected from a third party, being My Avalara Lodge Tax, that helps register individuals and helps pay individuals lodge tax on their behalf.
Very good, Jim. And Heidi?
Well, I don't think the issue is actually, it's the county's not authorized. The county is only authorized by New York State tax law to accept payment from the operator, Airbnb. They're not authorized to submit payment directly to the county on behalf of their client.
My recollection is at least this much fuzzy, but I believe that the name on the check was from My Avalara Lodge.
Jim, you have something?
Wasn't the one of the procedural issues with the Airbnb agreement, disagreement, was not being able, they would just put an amount on the table and we would have absolutely no auditing of it. I think that was one of the main...
Prior?
I think there is an audit function. The issue with the auditing function was you can't pick and choose who you're going to audit. If you're going to do an audit of what they're giving us, you have to do a complete audit.
I like that.
And that's to protect people, I suppose, from being...
picked on?
Yeah,
targeted.
Anything else?
Well,
all in favor?
Aye. Right.
Opposed? Number 78, amending the rules of order to permit memorializing resolutions. And Joe, you have this one too?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'll move for it. You move for it. I'll second it.
No, all right.
Joe, you want to lead off?
We talked about last time getting a feel from as many legislators as they could from both sides of the aisle on how they felt going forward. The Democratic caucus has let me know they want a plain memorializing resolution. And the Republican caucus would like a two-thirds clause that you get 16, somebody puts it up, you get 15 co-sponsors, and then it goes to the floor. Theoretically, that would cut down on discussion on the floor. That was why they were, I think, removed to begin with, because a lot of legislators felt like it was taking away from your policy and fund appropriation. I'll open it up to laws and rules. And let you guys decide how it goes forward.
Thank you, Joe. Kenny?
I have an amendment that I've drafted with copies for everybody that would do what Joe had just mentioned, and we talked about in caucus, which would permit memorializing resolutions as long as they are sponsored by two-thirds of the body. And once, essentially what it says is, once a memorializing resolution obtains co-sponsorship of at least two-thirds membership of the legislative body, said resolution shall be automatically placed on the next agenda of the committee of original jurisdiction. So if it's a health-related one, it would go to the health committee, et cetera, et cetera. I want to say one thing. Just my concern over memorializing resolutions was that they were being overly political, not necessarily that it was taking too much time. And I think that if you have to go out and get members of both sides of the aisle to sponsor a resolution and to actually join on as a co-sponsor, I think it eliminates some of the political, use of the political fodder and more as a sense of the body. I think that when something goes to when something goes to our state representatives, our federal representatives, or whoever it may be going to, I think it carries a lot more weight if it passes 23-0 than 12-11, like a lot of the memorializing resolutions were passing. So I offer this as an amendment.
Do I need a second, or does
yes?
Second on this, Hector?
I'm not on the committee. I used to be.
Mr. Chairman, you're talking about the amendment?
Yes.
Yeah, second on the amendment.
I don't think whom you
move. I move the amendment.
I'll second it.
And if I'm correct on a amendment in committee, it must be accepted by the sponsor?
It must.
Joe, before we debate this, what's your thoughts on it?
I'd like to hear what Heidi, Dave, and John think about the amendment.
Okay.
Can we do
fair
that?
Fair enough, of course.
I don't agree with the amendment. I understand where he's coming from, and I respect that, but I think if you're going to promote a more memorializing resolution, sometimes you're not going to get two-thirds. If you think it's the right thing, you think it's the right thing.
Hector, you want to make another point?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I understand the chairman's point, but I'd also argue breathing is political, right? Drinking water, well, it's clean water, right? It's the Clean Water Act, right? We have the Clean Air Act. At the end of the day, when we bring forward memorializing resolutions, it's for a whole host of different things, and we are, in fact, also a political body. So I understand your perspective, and I'm trying to be gentle here, but it basically is another way where we restrict speech. And right now, the speech of this legislature was stifled, and it was stifled because, for whatever the reasons were, the previous sponsor of that measure is no longer a legislator, so his main argument, as Kenny alluded to earlier, was, oh, it was about time, and then, of course, that person couldn't even make it to the budget vote. But that said, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. It's not as if somehow we somehow are unable to go through and debate resolutions like a deliberative body, like we should. So as far as my view, I understand what you're saying. I just don't agree with it. That's all. It's a restriction of speech.
Jonathan.
Just my opinion of the amendment is, you know, I share the similar beliefs in the caucus that, you know, that we should just simply reinstate memorializing resolutions that had been the previous policy. Since my time when there was memorializing resolutions and there wasn't memorializing resolutions, first of all, the history of memorializing resolutions and how they were used was no different on either side of the aisle. Also, if you, since they were removed, there was no difference in how many people, how much time was spent at the budget amendment hearings. There was no difference in how much debate was happened in committees. There was nothing changed. And also the amount of, you know, political, you know, the politics of the chamber, and, you know, just as much interjected into policy as it was into the memorializing resolutions.
Like breathing.
Oh, it's breathing. So, I mean, there was literally no difference besides the fact we just took a tool away.
Who had their hands up?
Heidi first.
Since the memorializing resolutions were done away with, what have you been doing as a legislative body to get your voice to Albany and beyond?
Letters.
And the letter comes out and you sign on to the letter?
Or not.
I'm gonna go with Hector just because
you like breathing.
I like breathing, drinking
and clean water.
Everything's political. now I forgot what I was gonna say.
Kenny.
Let Kenny go first. I'll remember.
You know, I respect the minority leader's opinion on the free speech issues, but I would say that we have a nearly uninterrupted and uninhibited public comment period before our legislative meetings, and I don't think that the memorializing resolution ban has stopped people from coming. I know that there was a big concern from members of the Democratic caucus last year when we ended the memorializing resolutions, that, you know, people weren't going to come and speak to us about issues of importance to them if we didn't have a resolution before us on the agenda. In fact, last month we had a bunch of concerned individuals come and speak in public comment talking about an issue in the state budget that led to us sending a letter to our state representatives to ask them to take something out of the budget. So I don't think that it hamstrings free speech whatsoever. I think what it does is it ends a practice that had been going on for a while of writing, you know, purely political resolutions to give us something to have disagreements about on the floor of the legislature. I think that, you know, since we stop the practice of having uninhibited memorializing resolutions, there's been less of a political undertone, in our debates across the hall. Because as I've said a number of times, that, you know, I was hoping by now I could say pave the roads, but, you know, there's not a Republican or a Democrat way to plow the roads, and that's, you know, that's the sort of thing that we do around here.
To the left or to the right?
Yeah.
David and Heidi.
Well, I think one of the people that abused this the most was you at first for these memorializing resolutions.
I don't know about that, but that's fine.
But that's from one end, and then we had somebody else who kind of abused them, I guess, from the other end. I don't know, but and I think you are abstaining free speech a certain amount, and we don't have inhibited because they have 2 minutes. But anyway, sometimes people on the legislature want to talk and want to make sure that they know where their constituents stand on a particular issue, and that's why they put forth something. Now, I'm going to look at the other end of it. In reality, despite what people say, it does take up a lot of time, and it does, at many times, not always, but it has taken up enough time where we spend hours on a memorializing resolution and then kind of rush through the agenda because, you know, we're all part-time people. And, you know, all of a sudden it's running at 11 o'clock and now you're running through the... So it does. It does take up more time than it should. But having said that, I still can't turn around and say you shouldn't have memorializing resolutions. I don't like the two-thirds, but I think maybe there's another way. I mean, it is nice that even the people that really support memorializing resolutions have said that it's not bad that we don't have them because we are being able to zero in better. But having said that, I still support memorializing resolutions for principle. But is there a way of actually doing something that we can still have the memorializing resolutions? My mindset is all memorializing resolutions should come last on the agenda, of course. What's that?
We used to have that.
Right. And I mean, that should definitely be there. I actually felt that maybe a separate meeting.
Hector?
Thank you. So, you know, look, a few of us actually remember the most infamous memorializing resolution. Safe Act.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the one where you impeached the president.
No, I think the Safe Act one's probably more infamous in our history.
I swear to God, honest to God.
Because we actually had to go and rent out UPAC in order to actually go and actually hear the public hearing.
Your boy brought that up first.
True, but you guys brought it up last, and apparently we had to rent out UPAC for it.
Man, we made it all the way to the playground.
God bless Terry. So, you know, I mean, you know, it's not as if somehow we haven't had these things sort of, you know, happen in our history. Now, one thing maybe that might be a suggestion, I don't think the Democratic caucus could sign off on a 15, you know, rule, but, you know, as a suggestion, and I'm just for conversation, maybe at least you have to have a minimum of one majority and one minority member. You know, maybe that's sort of something that way there's at least sort of that bit of bipartisanship, you know, that at least, because at least it's still a level in which the speech is not being impeded, so...
I'm going to go with Heidi, then Brian.
You know, excuse me for not knowing the rules to your memorializing resolutions, although I do feel it is very important for people to have a voice. But are there any rules to how many memorializing resolutions any one legislator can put forward?
Zero now.
Okay, so on a state level, you're allowed so many resos, you're allowed so many whatever.
Yeah, up in the Senate.
Perhaps there could be a limit. And it would make you really put forward only ones that were of the utmost important, closest to your heart, nearest and dearest to you.
Brian?
Okay, the purpose of memorializing resolutions, as I understand it, is to unify a legislative body so they can effectively communicate to other levels of government. I think the best memorializing resolution in the prior term was the one when the county legislature, when Bel Air was left out of funding for ORDA, and the county effectively communicated, I think it was unanimous, that objection.
Yeah, it wouldn't
to
be now, though.
Pardon me?
I said it wouldn't be now.
Well, that's why I support the chairman's amendment of garnering a 2/3 of the body, because then you're well on your way to crafting a unanimous voice for the legislature. And I think prior to this, my view, kind of Dave alluded to a little bit, is that I think my view as an outsider at the time was that the legislature was distracted on debating issues over which they had no legislative authority, and it was distracting from the core business. We have a $300 million budget that we pass every year and that we're tasked with administering. We all have views on national issues, and they're all very valid. And the letter form, which I think John put one already through this term, that's a very valid way of because I think when the higher levels of government receive our communication, whether it comes in a letter form or the fact that we stay here all night hashing out a memorializing resolution, they're going to give it the same weight one way or the other, however they receive it. But I think the 2/3 is fine, because I think in a case like ORDA last year, that was a very important matter that we're now deprived of having that ability now. But anyway, that's...
Thank you, Hector.
Thank you. So, you know, it's not as if, even with all this time that we have sort of gained, that we're spending more time to go and debate, say, for example, you know, the contracts over in IS, so we actually know how much we're actually spending on New World, right? Well, I'm just saying, we wanted to go and discuss sort of the nitty-gritty of contracts. Oh, well, but we're not using it for that time. It's not as if somehow, with the concept of a consent, non-consent agenda, we've already... clearly cut down on the amount of time. It's not as if somehow time is really an issue. I'm more likely to go and buy a political argument, although I also, of course, argue that it goes both ways. There's all sorts of political things. We're a political body.
If you're buying, I'm selling, Hector.
I know. But that said, you know, it's not as if somehow this is like a major holdup or the memorializing resolutions were a major holdup to us actually doing our diligence, doing our due diligence or doing our work. Clearly, we haven't had memorializing resolutions in well over a year, and it's not as if somehow we've had lengthy debate over over these massive amount of issues. We normally have about 5-10 non-consent resolutions a month, give or take. Depends, certain months we have more, certain ones we have less. You know, half of them are normally bonds that are in non-consent. It's not as if somehow we haven't sort of come together as a legislature well before to kind of go and hash out many of these issues that we theoretically are supposed to be debating on the floor.
Joe, did you have your hand up, then,
yeah.
Brian?
Sorry. I agree. I think Brian said it well, and he's right. I mean, that was the frustration, me watching from the outside looking in the last couple of years. And they did get used politically. I think sometimes people put them up to play gotcha, and they put people in a tough situation to vote against something that we really had no right to be voting on to begin with. Can we amend? Look, that's why I put in this caveat here, unless said resolution impacts Ulster County specifically, like Brian's example, that impacted us specifically. That's what memorializing resolutions are for, in my opinion, by definition. And they just have not been used that way 90% of the time. I thought this gave people the right to vote against something, maybe without really voting against it in theory, but you vote against it maybe because it has nothing to do with the county. It was pointed out that that could potentially give whoever the chairman is the right to make that call. I didn't foresee that. I guess that's true. He could then make that call, he or she, which no one was going to go for that. The Democrats would worry, Ken would shut something down. The Republicans would worry if there was a Democratic chairman. So can I strike this from, or can I amend this out before we act any further? Just get it out of here. So no matter what happens, if it fails or passes,
why not?
That's out. Do you guys mind doing that?
I'll move that.
I'll second it.
What are we striking?
We're striking.
Striking out unless said resolution is
struck. Right. That was my politics.
No matter what he wants to
pass and remind us all what we're supposed to be doing with this. But
I think we have an amendment.
There's an amendment on the floor that we're still debating.
Can you pull it for a second? Just get rid of this.
Sure. I'll withdraw my amendment.
Hold a second.
Then I'll move for this amendment,
and I'll second it.
Jim.
Joe, just if you're going to go back to the prohibited unless resolution impacts Ulster County, I think you need to expand upon that a little bit more because any of the politically motivated resolutions that we've dealt with over the past year can always come back to, the Health Care Act. It affects Ulster County residents. You got to...
Yeah, he just removed that, though.
No, he's putting that back in.
That's my amendment.
You're taking it all out.
I'm just taking my part out.
Unless he's taking that out so we can discuss the little better.
No, that's the only thing we're taking out here.
Look at the one in the packet.
It confused me. I looked at Ken's for a second.
That's what he wants to take out no matter what.
Is that Ken's amendment you got here?
Yeah.
So that...
So he's it goes back, the resolution goes back to just prohibited, and then we can discuss it further.
Thanks. And that was I didn't think it really held. It was more of a suggestion, a reminder, and it allowed people. I remember Rich Parody being for affordable care, but voting against the memorializing resolution because it was put up for political reasons, in his opinion, and it put him in a tough spot. It would have been nice for him to say, I'm for it, but I'm voting against it because it doesn't specifically... We would have been able to use it more than concrete, but if it does allow legally, if I'm being told that the chairman could use it literally to shut a memorializing resolution down, it's never going to pass.
Well, it's also, if I could...
Sorry, of course.
It's not just that the chairman could... And I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't want that responsibility. I feel like that's something that no matter how a chairman exercises that authority, someone's going to think he's doing it for an ulterior motive. But when you talk about something that specifically affects Ulster County, as Legislator Rodriguez opined a few moments ago, water and air are political. You look at some of the memorializing resolutions that we've dealt with in the past, and I challenge anybody to not find a specific effect on Ulster County in any of them, even the one that I love to bring up from my good friend, former legislator Brian Shapiro, in Jonathan Heppner's district. We supported the State Department's position on recent events in Tibet. I believe that was 2008. And there are Tibetan monks in Legislator Heppner's district, and that was why, that was brought forward. But does any of us, you know, did anybody who knew
the definition of the word unique or specific?
But still, regardless, I mean,
that was like 12 years ago. And by the way, can you non-violently attack him or something? I don't know. Whatever is appropriate. By
we got a nice letter from the Dalai Lama.
Same year, that was when the Rinpoche. Is that how you say it?
What's that? Which one?
The one that came and swore us in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I think so. I think it was.
But again, you know, that just, I mean, to go back to something more recent, if you prefer Legislator Rodriguez, you know, we had the dueling, Affordable Care Act resolutions from last year, one that Legislator Heppner put forward, one that Legislator Allen put forward, and, to say that there's no tangible effect in Ulster County if you read the resolutions correctly, 20,000 people could lose their health insurance, you know, if the Affordable Care Act was repealed.
Direct funding,
but again, you know, I think that anybody can find a direct connection. I think that that's the concern, and then it's up to the chairman to decide what has an effect and what doesn't. I think that it's not necessarily that the chairman would abuse the power. But, you know, again, it's one person's opinion when somebody else is going to have
a different one. More an attempt to unpoliticize the process without. I never intended that to be, literally taken. And I hoped we could do it, but we can't. We can't even handle it. That's why we don't have them. But, are we going to just...
We're going to vote on your amendment right now. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment carries.
So one more quick thing?
Go ahead.
Is there anything... I mean, this is unfortunate because we literally do have... It's split down the middle. But one side completely doesn't want two-thirds, it sounds like. One side completely does. A couple of people from both sides of the aisle nodded at a couple of things. Heidi and somebody else said, is there anything we can come up with that people can live with from both sides of the aisle? I was hoping to get emails from kind of
about 12 plus 1.
There you go.
I liked Heidi's suggestion.
The other thing was late. I do think they should, no matter what, they should go last. I think that would help some.
We could do that, and we used to do that.
I mean, the chairman determines the agenda. If they come back, I'm putting them last.
But there was a couple of things that occurred. One, I think Hector brought up something, and you had to have somebody from the other side.
To have them.
In other words, the same number that it requires for a motion to discharge.
Yeah.
That's a sign on to it, and that's to have one person from the other side in that group. That's to be at least one person from the other caucus. Might be an idea. I also feel that if you have a memorializing resolution, you actually have a separate meeting for it.
I like that idea.
That way, if you're going to have memorializing resolutions, if Jim keeps on putting them in, one of the members of your group are going to kill him, right? Or if I keep on putting them in, my caucus is going to want to rip my head off after a while.
Even more.
Even more than they do now, yeah.
When would this other meeting take place? I mean, that's the only thing, you know, it can be tough to corral, you know, it could end up being tough to corral a quorum of the legislature to come to the memorializing resolution meeting.
Immediately following.
Oh, well. It could be either immediately following, or it could be a separate day.
I could support if...
Oh, the meeting?
A separate meeting for the memorializing resolutions.
I think immediate following makes more sense, just also in terms of just staff.
Well, it would make it more convenient, but I'm looking for convenience.
So what's going to happen? We're going to have a meeting after the meeting. It's like the after party, but then half the people.
I don't think it should. It should be a separate meeting and a separate day.
That was my original.
and the sponsor has to be there.
There's a cost.
Yep.
In a special chair. The sponsor's where we throw things at him.
I mean, I wouldn't. The
sponsor's caucus has to be there. Go ahead, Kenny.
I mean, I wouldn't want to start throwing out additional meetings without talking to Vicky about stretching the staff thin, because if we're having a meeting,
one extra meeting a month. If there's a memorializing resolution, if there's no memorializing resolutions, you don't have to have
meetings. You've been here a long time, Dave. There's going to be memorializing resolutions. Oh, I don't know that any meeting that I've ever been
what?
To
since I've been on the legislature. They better be, then they better be a good one. They better be worth something.
I don't know that I can support the separate meeting. I could support them at the end. I feel like I could support a majority of the legislature. So you need 12 co-sponsors, and one has to be from the at least one from both sides.
That shuts down a minority if you have a.
You know what, Dave? Memorializing resolutions are not supposed to be about a minority bringing up a grievance. Memorializing resolutions are supposed to be a sense of the body telling the state legislature or the federal government or somebody else.
Sometimes people have to be embarrassed into it.
Joe and then Hector. Or Hector, then Joe.
No, let Joe go.
I don't like the. I like part of that. I don't like the idea of one from each caucus. I don't like the way our rules are set up. I'd love to have a third caucus, a legitimized third caucus. I think that'd be healthy. So if you start making rules that are predicated upon two caucuses, I don't like that. But some of the other things I heard thrown around, I heard Jonathan agree with things that Heidi and Ken said. I'd love to get something that was a little more bipartisan if we're going to bring these back. But
you want to, I mean, you want to think about it for another month, and we can try to come up with something that.
Hector, can you talk to your caucus and find out if any of these things that Brian and Heidi threw out that you guys could live with? I'd much rather bring this back with a near unanimous vote than a 12-11 vote.
All right, I can do that.
Like I said, I still think about separate night.
I will. I'll speak to Vicky about it too.
You've got to create it, so it's, in other words, it's there's some pain to it, shall we say?
Some pain.
So therefore, in other words, so people aren't just throwing out one after another just for the sake of getting their name in the paper.
You think the chief offender from the last 2 years would have given?
Yeah, because somebody in our caucus would have had her. She might have been off.
Him or her. You know,
you may get after a while, people would not put up with it.
So
they would be quite aggravated with it.
I take it we're going to table this for a month.
I'm cool with that.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Make a motion to be postponed.
Well, if he's pulling it for a month, don't ask him.
Well, he's not pulling it, I don't think. I think we should postpone it rather than withdraw it.
Yeah. All right, it's totally up to you.
Both sides.
I mean, because he can pull it out for her if he wants for the following month, too.
Hector, are you in a hurry?
No.
Okay.
I don't think.
I have a motion to postpone.
All in favor of postponing this?
Aye.
Thank you all. Okay, we're going to 98. Setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 9. A local law to adopt a countywide notification requirement for trapping of free roaming or feral or stray cats.
I'll move it for discussion.
That's the band, right? Stray Cats.
Yeah. It's Josie and the Stray Cats, right?
No.
It's called Stray Cats.
Rockabilly.
It was a rockabilly band, yeah.
Stray Cats Strut. Laura, please talk to us.
This law is to create a means basically, it's a registry in any other sense of the word. Whoever is doing a TNR or a rescue within a neighborhood will be required to report that they're doing an operation to either the town village clerk. The neighborhood is notified so that, that if somebody has a pet cat, they keep it inside. And there's a holding period so the animal is not immediately destroyed. If it does happen, then it's a pet. But the SPCA is on board with this. They had a lot of input with the revisions that were made recently to the legislation. And and it just gives the homeowner and or the pet owner an opportunity to get their animal back before it's either adopted out.
Laura, who would do the notification?
I'm sorry?
Who would do the notification?
The notification is done by the person who is doing the trapping or the capturing.
And how are we going to keep track of that?
It's supposed to be done by them with a, you know, to the clerk. If it is not, then a complaint can be filed.
To the town clerk, right?
To the municipal clerk, yeah, or the city clerk.
Is there any repercussions if they don't follow this?
There are fines levied. We're working with the SPCA. They'd be happy to do enforcement along with the Sheriff's Department.
David.
Don't they typically trap and release?
Most of them do. Most of them will do a trap, neuter, and release. That's released back to the animal is captured. If it's a sociable animal, though, it will be adopted out. That's something that I had done with Marie Post and with Lynn Clearwater.
Oh, gotcha.
I was working with them. You know, because colonies are great. It's usually a food source, but it's always nicer to have a pet that's got a family that's going to take care of it forever. So, if it is adoptable, or you know, sometimes they're not right away, but you can work with them. And we have most of the ones that we trap personally; they were adopted.
Cool.
Another thing that's in here that is very important is if the animal is deemed to be so medically ill that it does have to be euthanized, that's to be done by a licensed veterinarian. Somebody is making that medical decision who is capable of making a medical decision.
Hmm. I didn't realize that part was in there.
Cool. Kenny?
Who would the TNR group be responsible for covering the cost of the euthanization?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's basically when they're taking, you know, so-called ownership of the animal. And there is a 7-day holding period. So if the animal is healthy, it's deemed that it's not, they're not able to socialize it, it'll be immediately returned back. So it'll be released where they originally caught it. If they can socialize it or it needs any medical treatment, that's where the 7 days come in and the other decisions are made. So that gives, if it did have an owner, that gives the owner time to be reunited with the animal. And that's the important part.
Mm-hmm. Jim, go ahead.
Laura, I want to make myself very, very clear on the
I am
a devoted pet animal lover,
yeah.
And it's my understanding that trap, neuter, release, that the state, that's not applicable into New York State law.
New York State says you cannot release an animal to the wild. So if I were to catch your cat and drive it 50 miles from here and dump it somewhere, that is a release into the wild. If you're returning it, then that's something that the TNR has done. That's something Ulster County has worked with the SPCA. So that would be, I'd pick your cat up, take it for a ride around the block, and return it. That is okay. It's going back where the care was provided, where the food source is.
As you know, this has been for 25 years a very large issue in one particular neighborhood.
Right.
We have half the neighborhood feeding the cats. We have the other half wanting to kill the neighbors that do feed the cats.
And you also see what happened when they did come in and did euthanize them all. You ended up with a brand new colony that wasn't spayed and neutered and never had shots.
Well, the first group was the SPCA.
Was Woodstock Animal Sanctuary.
Well, it was my understanding the SPCA came in trapped and neutered.
They came in a second time.
Okay.
But they weren't the only ones that were there.
I just want to make sure that, you know, your local law, Agen Markets, it'll line up with Agen Markets.
Yeah. Yeah, it's my understanding from talking to the executive director of the SPCA that as long as there's a trap, neuter, and return, it is okay. If you were to take a feral cat and drop it off hoping it'll start another colony, then no.
It's the feral cat that is not allowed to be released. It's illegal.
I'm going to go Dave, then Kenny.
Yeah, Laura, I noticed this is marked up a lot. So what?
Did you get the marked up one? Or, oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I got it marked up, but I just want to. I'm curious as to why. What happened? Did you have a set of people that went through
it? Yeah. This was actually submitted. We got a last minute comment, substantial ones from Gina Carbonaro, who's the executive director of the Ulster County SPCA.
All right. So who did you work with? Who did you work with on this?
That was the executive director of the SPCA.
Okay, were there fellow legislators also?
Yes, actually, this went through the Health Committee.
Okay.
With a fine-tooth comb. We were actually there for quite a while.
Okay.
I believe there were 9 other rescue groups as well.
Okay, good. Because I wasn't aware of them. That's why I wanted to find out. This is basically...
Yeah.
No, this is the way I'd like to see legislation come forward, so... I have no problem with
it. Not to interrupt, but does not. I was there. Kathy was there. Did go through it. A lot
good.
Of these marks.
No, that's important. I'm good.
Repeated. The same word has to be taken out. And
yep. No, I know that.
It looks more marked up than it actually.
To be honest with you, I prefer to see it like this.
Yeah.
That way, I know that you were working on it. That it's. In other words, it's not something you're throwing out at me.
Yeah, and it'll hold up.
Right. So I thank you for this, and I think we ought to move for the vote.
All in favor of saving cats?
Just one question.
Sure.
Release and return are the same
thing.
They're
two different things.
They are the same or they're...
They're two different things. Return means you're taking it back to the same spot, not releasing it. Because a release could be you open up the door of the clinic after they're spayed and just let them back outside. That you can't do that with a raccoon. You can trap a raccoon if it's eating your chickens, but you can't take it and bring it 50 miles away. So that's why that was written the way it is with the egg. You can't just take an animal and release it. It has to be returned back. To
not even a skunk?
Not even those skunks. And there's reasons.
No, you have to adopt it out.
No, well, I broke the law then. I didn't realize
it. Was to me by
no, I mean, I
DEC
caught one
in
my yard and I
brought it down to Walker.
I brought it down to Walker.
Oh, God.
That's why George got sprayed by a skunk.
It's somebody from the Wildlife Division of the DEC said the reason you can't do that, especially with wildlife, is it could be carrier or something that isn't in an area. So you could be releasing it into an area that it's so-called clean. You could be putting it in an area that doesn't have a food source for it. So that's why it was written that way. But returning it, you're taking it right back there.
Kenny, and then I can
relocate my woodchuck. So.
I wouldn't admit
don't
that.
Don't put anything on tape.
Laura, the concern release return did come up in caucus. Mm-hmm. I think that we're all prepared to support to go to a public hearing. Do you have any objection to sending the law to Ag and Markets for some sort of an advisory opinion on the word return?
No, I'd like to get their support on
okay.
it. Yeah. I mean, otherwise, then every TNR operation is
mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I know that, I think that the reason that there's a concern, and I think our attorneys had raised it, last month previously, and then Nick had restated it this month, is that there's specific legislation that's in Albany right now to change the law to allow for TNR.
Yeah.
So that I think that's
clear enough.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, if as long as you don't mind, I was going to suggest that we just send a letter to Ag and Markets to say, hey, is this is this permissible?
Very good. Heidi, you had something to add?
Well, yeah. I mean, I. As it states here, adopting a countywide notification requirement, which I fully support. Mm-hmm. If we're going to debate the whole TNR, that's where it's getting gray.
Mm-hmm.
So tonight, if we're here to be putting this forward for a public hearing, only on the notification.
Thank you, yes.
And when would that letter be back, before a public hearing?
I mean, the goal would be to have it back as soon as possible. I mean, but there's no sure thing that they respond to us. You know, they might not.
So
the Attorney General doesn't. We would move forward until such time.
Hearing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm always in favor of public hearings. So
yeah,
I mean,
you get good feedback.
Most of them,
mostly.
I was going to say I have a number of few.
Except
it's okay. It's okay.
All in favor.
Almost.
Aye.
All right, Mr. Chair, I would actually like to take you up on your very generous offer to go very quickly to go on the electrical licensing law. I do have to get more to go.
Let me see if I could find that, Hector.
I know, Mr. Chairman. I know you indulge me so much because of our long friendship.
Yes.
long and storied friendship.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't talk about the stories.
We'll go one out of order, and that would be 155, the last one.
And I'll move it for discussion.
Can I say that
I apologize.
Before you interrupt me?
He's new.
It's been a couple of months.
And I'd like to add, this is Chairman Veront's first time here this year, so we do welcome you, Ben.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 13 of 18, a local law establishing the Ulster County Electrical Licensing Board. Kenny?
And providing for the qualifications exempt. I'll move it for discussion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
You got something to add, Ken? Or Hector?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Wait, we're voting on it?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought we were going to discuss on it.
I don't need to have a call a vote to discuss it.
I know, that's why I was confused about the vote. Okay, I have discussion.
Okay, go ahead.
Thanks.
What already happened?
No.
I got interrupted.
Yeah, Legislative Rodriguez, you mentioned to me earlier that you had no problem postponing it for a month so we could have discussion.
Well,
so
that was what my intent was.
That's why I sort of stopped that from happening. So.
I appreciate your dedication to the process, Mr. Chairman.
I do what I can.
I don't know what's happening with my old friend. I don't know what's going on there. The last time we were voting for it for a public hearing is because I had discussion.
I can't hear you.
You're making a big assumption on friendship.
All right, so
are we pulling this, Hector, or no?
Well, no, it's not pulling it. It's to go and postpone it on Mums.
Same difference.
No, it's really not.
They're
very, very
yes, they're very different.
Chairman,
the same difference. They're very different.
After 6 years together on laws, after 8 years together on laws and rules, you know the difference between tabling, pulling, and postponing.
The only result is I don't have to deal with it tonight.
Considering that we're postponing it, Mr. Chair, and that Chairman Ronk offered, I guess, to apparently postpone it.
I'll make a motion that we postpone it for a month so we can have further discussion amongst ourselves and, you know, possible changes that may be proposed.
And I second it.
All in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
Aye.
If I may, Mr. Buell, give me one more second, Mr. Chair of the committee. Mr. Chairman of the legislature, and through the chair to the chair, you had actually brought up, I think, the idea of doing a subcommittee specifically on these kinds of issues. I don't know if that's still something that you want to propose or discuss.
It was going to be something I was going to discuss. I expected to be discussing the two licensing laws back to back. I would think that the subcommittee of laws and rules, we could do a joint subcommittee laws and rules and public works. I don't know if you'd want to have, you know, people involved in public works on a subcommittee like that.
What jurisdiction do they have?
Yeah. Construction.
I know, but that's our buildings, not buildings in general. I guess by technicality, it'd probably be economic development, but I'm not getting into that.
Now that one, I feel is a tougher sell. But
I know.
But you know, or just laws and rules.
Separate committee per se to handle it.
I don't think we need a separate committee.
Laura, go ahead.
We actually had, there was a special meeting on the plastic bag law that was open and optional, and we had a nice turnout. We had great discussion, and, you know, revisions were made that we all agreed to. I think rather than have something, you know, a subcommittee just for licensing,
that's a good idea. As long as you're open to it, Mr. Chairman.
It worked very well.
Okay. So then maybe that would be
That sounds like a positive, because there's a lot of correlation between the two of these. There's a lot of things that are similar.
And in this case, you know, this law was modeled after, again, those radicals in Orange County, not those radicals in Greene County or those radicals over in Sullivan County, all of whom actually have electrical licensing.
I know that you're partial to the word radical, but I don't know that it applies to any of those places.
Well, I'm just saying that because by inference this is.
I understand.
Radical. So on that note, though, Mr. Chair of the committee, thank you, and the postponed.
Thank you.
Safe trip.
Thank you.
Okay. Kenny, I'd like to add, and Hector, you might want to hear this too before you leave, that I've been asked to abstain from the Laura's Law, and if you combine them, I won't be able to discuss the electrical one.
Oh, good point.
We could hold, if you want, almost like, well, no, I mean, but if we're holding an open session, just an open session, that's not as if somehow, that's not a...
it's an official meeting.
What's that?
It'd be an official meeting. Noticed.
But the chairman could just come in only on the one law and not on the other.
Yeah, you just walk out. You could just, you know.
I would get advice from the attorney on that.
Yeah.
All right. Regardless.
I really think, anyway, you need to deal with one and then deal with the other one. I don't think you need to deal with them together. I mean, the electrical one is a lot less controversial. I think the majority of the people probably would support an electrical one without a lot of problems, because it's, you know, it's a common sense sort of thing in a way.
There is precedent.
And there's a lot. And a lot of people, in other words, you know, like, for instance, City of Kingston's always had, a license, because, you know, the mindset is we don't want some Yahoo doing something in one place and burning down the whole neighborhood.
Right.
You know, so you know, it's been less on the rural area because it's less of a concern. But a lot of our areas are getting more and more urban, smaller little urban pockets, shall we say. So,
Laura, so, with that note, is it your intent that we postpone 154?
Yeah, actually, for different reasons. I've been getting input separately. I am interested. Right now, it's a very... The law is supposed to be for consumer affairs, consumer protection. When it was originally written, I looked at it, I said, oh no, I said, this is too much. I said, small business is not going to be able to perhaps pass a test. You know, there's academics, there's vocational... the suggestions have been to have more of a formal registration than going in front of a board. So I would like to, yes, postpone it and make some further amendments to it so that there is a registration, but not all the testing in the boards and, you know, just that there is compliance and protection for them.
Is it going to look completely different than this?
Not a lot. As far as the boards go, yes. I have to see if it has to be called a registration or if it has to be called licensing. But I think as far as the testing goes, that a lot of that's going to come out.
So we could open this up, take it out of order, vote to postpone it, and get you out of here.
Okay.
Move.
All right.
Second. Yep.
154.
I'll move to postpone 154.
Second.
All in favor of postponement?
Aye.
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 I think on the electrical one, if everybody on the committee really takes a course, and everyone else for that matter, read through it and get an idea of what they think should be changed. I mean, that one I think is a little easier to deal with and get out than the other one. The other one's a little much more involved because you're dealing with all kinds of construction phases and things like this.
I'd almost argue that I think I support the contractor one more than the electrical one, because, you know, any electrical work that's done by an electrician through a building through any sort of a building permit has to be inspected by, you know, somebody, you know, who's licensed by the Board of Fire Underwriters. So, you know, most of the house fires happen from Joe Weekender trying to do electrical work.
And you're not going to, this isn't going to prevent that.
No. But regardless,
now,
I understand your point.
Should we have a meeting on this? I think keeping them separate is good. Should we have it a different night and invite maybe some people who have an interest in it?
Just like the last one we did with the bags.
Invite anybody who wants to come and join the discussion. I'm always in favor of bringing the stakeholders together.
Mm-hmm.
Feel that, boss?
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to go back to 149. Setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 11, prohibiting conversion therapy upon a minor within Ulster County.
I'll move it for discussion.
I'll second.
Mr. Hepner.
Thank you, Chairman. So yeah, this is much closer to law, and I believe it's, you know, very straightforward, with the exception of the legislative intent section, which, you know, we put our own words in, the actual nuts and bolts of the local law. Is essentially identical to the local law that recently passed with unanimous support in the Erie County Legislature. So if we were to go forward with this, we would become only the second county in New York State outside of New York City to do so. But I just learned that since its introduction here, our friends across the river in Dutchess County have begun to do so as well, the Dutchess County Legislature. I was actually very shocked when I learned through, you know, the efforts of the Erie County Legislature that New York State was not one of nine states in the country that has banned conversion therapy. There have been efforts to, but they have failed on the state level, and the governor has tried to take some efforts to combat conversion therapy, going through the route of executive orders to really try to go after the ability for insurance carriers to cover this treatment, which is awful. It has been discredited and proven to be actually detrimental and harmful for minors, from every leading medical group, from the Medical Society to the Academy of Pediatrics. We had a good discussion in the Health Committee where it passed unanimously. There was actually one additional amendment made, thanks, that I actually believe made the bill stronger. It gave it an even extra tooth. And that was proposed by Legislator Warrow, so I enjoyed that discussion and her input. Also thanks to the input of Legislator Maloney. I have been in contact. The copy of this has been sent to the Sheriff's Office, who hasn't come back with any complaints and or comments yet, but the DA, Holly Conright, left me a nice message. He too was surprised and, you know, believes it should be done on the state level, but was very supportive in the message he left me. I've also been working in conjunction with the executive director of the Hudson Valley LGBTQ Center across the way, and their executive director, Jeff Rindler, who's been extremely supportive. And so this is just the next step in going to public hearing. I'm willing to take any questions.
I believe that, let the public speak and see where it happens. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. I didn't get my hand up fast enough, but that's fine.
Did you want to speak?
Yeah.
I think I'll say you could speak at public hearing, Chairman Rao.
I don't think I can.
I'm sure you'll be able to sneak it in somehow.
Boy, they're rough, aren't they? It's a tough crowd here.
Yeah, it is what it is.
We move quick.
We are going to go to the last one, 151. Amending the 2018 Ulster County budget to create the position of administrative assistant in the office of the comptroller.
I'll move it.
Second.
All in favor? I'm just saying, if we're going to follow precedent here.
Do you have any discussion? John.
I just have a question. To the deputy comptroller. So it was my understanding that originally your request was for an executive, a confidential secretary. This resolution calls for that of the position of an administrative assistant, which I believe is, I don't want to say less of a position, but, you know.
Civil service.
Yeah. And so can I just get the opinion of the comptroller's office on, you know, the preference, your thoughts, all of the above?
Absolutely. Thank you. While we fully respect the intense spirit of Chairman Ron's proposal to grant administrative assistant position, we have some significant reservations about how this position will play out in practice in the operational realities of the position as well as the office. First being flexibility of hours. This individual will be expected to come in mornings to cover certain meetings and events, as well as evenings to cover certain meetings and events. So the typical CSDA schedule of 8 or 9 to 5 is really not going to work for this person. Secondly, our preferred candidate. Having to choose off a list does not marry the confidentiality as well as the hand-in-glove nature that this individual is expected to work with our office as well as the controller himself. And mind you, binding that person with the privilege of CSEA protection will not only bind us currently, but our successors, be it Republican or Democrat. And also, it limits our ability to essentially fire this person as well as myself and a CPA, our Director of Internal Audit Control, are also subject if things are not working out with that person. Last but not least, a cursory review of similar administrative assistant types throughout the county. This position would be inadequately funded compared to the rest by about $5,000 to $10,000. So at the current level of 41.8, that is well below the 50s or so that I was seeing pretty much across the board. And that will put us at a competitive disadvantage as far as getting some more detail out there. So those are our recommendations.
Kenny, then Dave.
Thanks. I want to correct the record a little bit to what I think that Evan said in the beginning, that here I was attempting to craft something and that I was the one who picked the position. It was actually the comptroller himself who in February, either late January, early February, after we had discussions at NYSAC, sent me the job description of administrative assistant and said, this is the kind of thing I want. I didn't just pick this out of the clear blue sky. I didn't go through the CSEA manual to find one. The comptroller actually sent it to me via email, and I have it. It's on county email, so it's full. But that's why I was very surprised to have received this memo last week in April, several months after he and I have had the conversation, and further conversations afterwards to say that it was not acceptable anymore, that wasn't what he was looking for. The job description of an administrative assistant is quite frankly, I look down the list of duties and responsibilities, and it's almost to a T what the comptroller came and talked about at the budget hearing last year. So, I shouldn't be speaking right to the deputy comptroller. I apologize. It's surprising to me that all of a sudden it's not what he was looking for. It's not all the things that he said at the budget hearing, at Ways and Means, at the departmental appeals. What he said to me at NYSAC and subsequently other places. I think that this provides a good compromise and a starting point, and I think that we should move forward on it.
Dave and Jonathan, if you don't mind, I'm going to let Evan answer Kenny. I believe that's what you want to do.
I acknowledge that. I think that his position has evolved, and it's now kind of become fitting a round peg in a square hole.
Thank you, David and John.
Yeah, I think he could have misspoke, but anyway, I'm not going to get into that. But I will say that every countywide elected official has a confidential secretary, as well as most department heads, as well as you. And to single out one person, one county elected official, and say that they don't deserve a confidential secretary is a little troublesome to me. Because it seems more on the vindictive side, or getting even, or whatever the case may be, as opposed to good budgeting, or as opposed to good governing. And so my take on this is he deserves to have a confidential secretary, just like every other countywide elected official, and in many ways, probably more so than others. I mean, he deals with certain things. He may secretly audit somebody. You don't want them to know that that's happening. Whatever the case may be. So, I really think that if you feel that an administrative assistant is enough, then let's go back through the budget and let's save some money and make everybody else have just an administrative assistant. And then it would make sense to me. And I say, yes, go right ahead. Makes sense.
Jonathan? Yeah, I think Legislative Donaldson, you know, I agree with everything you said. And just to add to that, I mean, we can, you know, interpret and use the comptroller's words in that situation, but the reality is the comptroller never should have had to be in that position, because it's ridiculous that one specific elected official gets something taken away from them that every other elected official in the leadership role in the county has. I mean,
along with most department heads.
With most department heads. It's the precedent that this established when we took this position away, and the fact that we're still having this, and now we're trying to give them lesser and calling it compromise. I mean, the precedent it sets, it's so terrible. The future political retribution, and a whole can of worms. Further, I mean, I can't imagine.
This is the point of order. I object to the description as political retribution.
How do we know that?
I said there's such a bad precedent for political retribution, so that in the future, there's now precedent that just take away positions from duly elected officials. Now that precedent can be used for political retribution in the future.
Thank you for the clarification.
That's been the case since I've been here, but
before you were here.
Before I was here.
Because I can honestly say I can't imagine one person that has a confidential secretary would say they'd rather have, even in your position as a part-time leadership position, that would you trade a confidential secretary for the position of an administrative?
I mean, if I could answer that, Kev?
I think we're going to go in order, if you don't mind.
All right, so I can answer. Sorry, John.
But no, I'll yield to the chairman.
Go ahead, Ken.
You know, and the response to you and Dave bringing up the chairman's confidential secretary.
Who I think is great, by the way. I think you deserve one.
Regardless of that, you know, she's also a deputy clerk and performs many tasks around the office as a deputy clerk. I would say that, you know, 75-25, 75% being deputy clerk duties and 25% being confidential secretary duties. You know, if you'd like to take away that from Vicky, I don't have a problem with it, I guess. But my point is that, you know, everyone points to the chairman's confidential secretary. You know, I don't use.
But you're actually making the argument. You're making the same argument, because that's what they're arguing. They're saying that the confidential secretary is going to be doing budget work when they need her. Him or her, they're going to be doing all kinds of stuff. Their job
and
is going to be very
the restraints of the diverse. The system, like you said, through being the CSEA contract.
Is there any other confidential secretary for any of these other elected officials who goes and represents, you know, like Holly Kahnwright's confidential secretary does not go and represent him at a naturalization ceremony? Does not go and represent him at a Chamber of Commerce breakfast, does not run an intern program, does not... A lot of these things in the comptroller's memo do respect, and I said this to Elliot, and I said, I'm not trying to tell you how to run your office, but a lot of these things say to me that this is the kind of thing that a deputy would do, the deputy comptroller would do. A lot of these things aren't something that I think that any other confidential secretary in the county would do.
Well, I can't argue with you on that. I tend to agree with you on that, but that's not my decision to make. It's the way I look at it. It's not my decision to make. He's the elected official, and he's going to use his confidential secretary. The idea of a confidential secretary is the idea that they're very fluid. You're going to use them wherever they want. You use yours a certain way. I have a feeling the sheriff uses his confidential secretary a different way, and you use yours.
But then if I could just...
I agree with you. I think the deputy should be the ones that does that.
I mean, following up on that line of thought, though, the comptroller came to the budget hearing, and again, that's one of the complaints that I know people have had, is that we're doing this outside of the budget process, after the budget process, after, you know, the request was denied by the legislature. Now we're back into it again. But one of the things the comptroller brought up at the budget meetings and the appeals, because I was there for all of it, was that he doesn't have anybody to answer the phones. He doesn't have anybody to open the mail. He doesn't have anybody to write letters. Who is going to be doing all of those things that he said he doesn't have anybody to do right now when the confidential secretary is running all over the county doing all these things early in the morning and late at night?
They're not all over the
community. But that's the problem, is early in the morning and late at night hours. That's what Evan just said.
Right, but that means that's sort of a generalization.
I understand. I'm just...
Jonathan and Laura, did you have your hand up first?
Yes.
Do you want to go? Go ahead, Laura.
Sure. I mean, there's been a lot of good points that come up, but, you know, what it boils down to is if you have a confidential secretary, all right, and they are expected to do some clerical work as well, and I know that none of the county clerks for the legislature, you don't stick to just morning or night. I mean, it you can divvy up those times. If it's civil service, you would have the same clerks that would be there regardless of who gets elected for that position. All right, just imagine the county exec. Somebody challenges him. He has these civil service people, okay, that he's formed a liaison with, and somebody else steps in. I mean, I would be really concerned about the confidentiality of that. I mean, this is somebody that you entrust to carry forward, you know, to have your back, basically. And to have a civil service person in that position, I don't think that would adequately, you know, meet the needs of an elected official.
Thank you, Laura. I'm going to let Evan go, and then Jonathan, and then I think we could wrap this up.
Just to further stress the difference in the position, a combination of 9 electeds and department heads, which is the majority of those with confidential secretaries, also have an administrative assistant, administrative aide, or similar position. Sometimes multiple, and that's sheriff, clerk, attorney, county attorney, commissioner of finance, county attorney, public works commissioner, health commissioner, social services commissioner, and planning department. So even in their mind, that the position's not being fully met one way or the other. So there's still supplementation on both ends. But just speaking to your point as far as duties, I mean, I'm here right now advocating for this position. We would not be expecting a confidential secretary to come and do this at this point. But if we're having an advisory committee meeting at, say, 7:30 or 8 a.m., we don't require our CSCA folks to come in at that time. But yet, myself, Alicia, and who would be the third appointed management confidential person, we are there during that time. So it's things like that, not necessarily representing the office, but there's still a presence that needs to be done. Taking notes, you know, something along those lines.
Jonathan?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that, I mean, in my time here, I've absolutely seen confidential secretaries providing support services outside of the 9-to-5 window, 100%. And again, I think it's crazy that we're still spending this much time discussing this issue.
I agree. All in favor of this?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? What's the vote there?
All in favor of restoring it?
Yes.
All in favor of the resolution?
No, the resolution is not restoring it. The resolution is giving them a...
Yes.
The administrative assistant.
Administrative assistant.
I'm in favor of that.
That
would make it 3-3.
Okay.
Does it pass then?
Nope. Fair enough.
$153.
Well, that's your mindset. You shouldn't be looking at things.
I agree with you on this one, Dave. You got to go for it all. $153, adopt and propose local law number 1 of 18, local law amending local law number 2 of 2006. And we're going to...
I'll move it.
To amend the terms for certain Ulster County elected officials.
I'll second it for the purpose of discussion.
Dave.
I think the first thing that has to be done on this is they get separated out. These are two distinct issues, and I don't believe you can put them together on the ballot. I believe it's illegal. And if it isn't illegal, it's immoral. It's totally two different things. In other words, one is dealing with a extended term. One is dealing with a
term limit.
Term limit. Now, many people may support term limits but don't support an extended term, or vice versa.
I'm gonna get the attorney's opinion there before I call on you, Joe.
I'm trying to find this. Where's this in the packet here?
You can't add. It's asking a compound question, basically.
So the concern that you have is that the questions, that there's two questions in one.
There's two questions in one. That's correct.
Yeah, I mean, candidly, is it legal? It probably is. Does that mean that there might not be some concerns or some issues that you have from some folks about it? Could there be some legal arguments that challenge it?
Doesn't a ballot say that it has to be one issue?
No, it does, but but the whole term limit thing and the extension can be considered one issue.
It's not one issue, it's two issues.
Whether or not it's what's that?
It's two issues.
I'm telling you from the research we did that the bottom line is you can combine these into one question when you're dealing because the issue is what are the terms. It's an overall what's the terms of the particular legislator, and terms are, and that can include the length as well as the limitation. So you're dealing with the same thing. Now if you were dealing with two totally different subject matters, I would agree with you, and then it's much more clear. But the question is whether or not, as it's drafted now, would likely pass constitutional muster. It would likely pass a challenge. But I'm going to say this. Could I definitively say it would? The answer is no. There is a possibility there could be some issues with it.
Yeah, guys, I know if it does go on, I would be challenged.
Sue me again?
Yeah. I'm not. And I think I can get to, on this one, I could probably get a hell of a lot of support on it.
Joe?
And I plan on doing it. Yeah. I already got 1,000 bucks for
the
show.
I'm comfortable.
I think the legal comes down to term. So it's length of your term.
Limit of your term.
And limit of your term. That's why it can be, and it's been done. I mean, we're going off of, I think there's two different counties in New York State that...
Suffolk,
I think, is the one most recent, and our what we've talked about in wording is very similar to what they put on the ballot and what held up. And it dealt with both of those things.
It's likely going to succeed. I'm telling you that. And then we've looked into this, and those are good examples.
That being said, I... term
limits. God's making me spend my money.
the most important part of this for me, if this is a matter of 2-year terms passing without extending it to 4-year terms against trying to package it and not having the package pass, I would gladly, I'll have to talk to, this is a triple, this is three main sponsors. So, and Laura, we all are in agreement, the three sponsors, on the extension and the limitation, but, I don't feel as I feel strongly wanting them both, but I don't feel as strong about leaving it in. So I'm going to leave that up to Laura and Ken on whether we leave it in and run with it together or split it.
I know I feel very strongly about leaving them together. I think it's a combined issue because the way I've always seen term limits and an extension of a term, it's a give and a take. You know, you're telling, you know, you're saying, you know, to the voters. You know, if you vote for this, you know, I get a longer time to serve you, but you are guaranteed that I'm only going to serve a maximum of this number of terms. I also think that an extension of the term from 2 years to 4 years is good government and provides the most meaningful campaign finance reform that you can have because you're running in exactly
but
half
not,
of the election.
There's not one good government group that will come out and support that. Name one. Again.
I believe that the League of Women Voters supports an extended term and does not support term limits.
You are incorrect.
I'm incorrect on that? Okay. I thought Dara said that at the last meeting.
Yeah, that's what I thought she said.
I'm not
relatively
any,
certain she did.
No, they did not.
Reclaim New York is very formal.
No, she said
no, they are not.
About
okay. They came and spoke at the public hearing.
I know you don't believe in term limits.
Can I just ask a question?
Yes, go ahead, Heidi. I'm sorry.
14. What is the issue with separating them? Why can't they be asked separately?
I don't know. That's what I think they should be done.
One of the reasons that I don't support them separately is because everywhere it's been done separately, the limit passes and the extension does not.
Practical.
Well, then I guess that's what the people want. So what do you want to do?
Jonathan.
Let's pull wool over the voters' eyes by giving them something else, right?
It's not wool over. They can defeat it as a package. Yeah,
Jonathan.
I feel very strongly about it.
I'm still torn on it, but I just want from the Democratic caucus, the discussions we've had, I think, you know, this is kind of the first thing we before we go forward with anything, kind of have to figure out, because I know even within our caucus, there's a very, you know, there's a divide between whether people think it should be separate or whether it should be together. So I think before this is going, you know, further, I think the first, you know, real hurdle we have to figure out before we actually even get to the details of, you know.
I agree. Laura, how do you? Sorry, you should be called on, but
Laura, go ahead if you got.
I'm not sure if you're going to get a consensus on that, mm-hmm. even within caucus. You know, some of them feel that, you know, 2 years is fine and it's fair, because if somebody awful gets in, you can get them out in 2 years. And then
I separating them.
Yeah.
No, I was talking about separating them. That was just saying, yeah, for your guys, away, that we that's the biggest hurdle before you even get into those details.
I think the extension of 12 years is pretty uniform. It's just whether it should be extended from 2 to 4.
Yes, that's what we're talking about now. Okay. Look, I see the value in 4-year terms. We're all getting ready in a couple of months to start running again, mm-hmm. and paying a lot of attention to that run every other year. We're also at
we don't need to get rid of memorializing resolutions. Mm-hmm. We don't have to worry about any of that.
Well, I see the value in a 4-year term. It's something I feel strongly about, but I don't feel as strongly about. It would be unfortunate. It probably would not pass that way, like Ken says.
They've done it 2 years ago.
But it comes down to, this is a 23-person body and getting it passed. And I know they're going to, a lot of people, we're going to have a lot of people come out publicly, and we already have. And they're people that aren't really for term limits, and they're going to use the 4-year term extension as an excuse to fight us on it. So that's concerned me. But there is three of us on this. So I'm kind of looking to Ken and Laura to help me out on this.
I like a 4-year with 3 limits on it. Did Ulster pass the supervisors at a 4-year term then?
Yes.
And so did New Paltz. So, I mean, it's going that way.
Yeah, but that's a supervisor.
But also, you know, well, look, but not
checks and balances, too. Yeah, but we're checking to the exec and the three-headed monster here. They all have 4-year terms.
It's supposed to. It makes more sense. You have short-term elections and you have long-term elections. Short-term election, just like I am on the federal level and on the state level, the executives are always elected for 4-year terms. Legislative bodies tend to be elected for 2-year terms. You have to go back to your public. I go back every 2 years to my public. I've run unopposed once. I still went back to my public. I knocked on my doors. And that's what you have to do. You have to do it every 2 years. I don't start running now, and I won't be running it then. I won't. If I decide I'm going to run next time, I'll start running around June. Before that election, I'll start getting out, and I'll be getting my signatures, I do the thing, I start knocking on doors. And the districts have not been gerrymandered in a way that is insane. So, in other words, there's no reason actually for pushing term limits either, mm-hmm. because people have just so you know, the 4-year term, I'm against more than the other, because I feel you need to go back to your public. Sure, it'd be wonderful to get a 4-year term. I'd love to have that. But reality is, I don't think it's good governance. And I don't think term limits are either. I understand term limits for like an executive in that end, because they may amass a lot of power. I don't understand term limits for legislators, particularly like us. We don't amass power. It's not like we're getting more and more power and we can give something away. That's not what happens with us.
what we do is gain more and more knowledge. I mean, I've been here, yes, 24 years. Maybe I outlived my welcome. I'm sure many of you felt that I outlived my welcome. But it hasn't stopped me from representing my people. And I think every year my people elect me, and I have somebody runs against me. Only once did somebody not run against me.
That's because you...
I always have somebody, yeah, because I speak out. I speak out, and I'm going to always speak out. That's my nature. But the point is, I go back to my public every 2 years, and I think that's a healthy thing to go back to your public every 2 years. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Now, I can understand maybe on the national level, maybe Congress should be allowed to spend for it. Maybe I could make that argument because they do have to. They campaign. They nonstop campaign. But we don't nonstop campaign. To say that I campaign, do you campaign? Are you starting your campaign for next term yet?
I campaign 24 hours a day.
Right.
I'm
right.
Always out there shaking hands.
Exactly. And I do the same thing. And so you do the same thing. You go to meetings, you do things, you talk to people. That's your campaign, yes. But you're not really specifically campaigning.
I'm not running TV ads.
Yeah, you're not running TV ads, right? So, I mean, I don't agree with either one.
Robert's contracting has the best windows.
I am adamantly against the four-year term. I think that is just totally against good governance.
It doesn't look like we're going to separate these, or at least at this meeting. Do we have anything further to add? Laura?
No, I mean, I'm just saying from previous experience, if something important comes up, but it's an election year, I was told as the legislator not to bring it forward because it wouldn't be a good idea. You know, let's keep things very mellow. I would like to see a longer term. This way you can actually come in for your 3 years and be a legislator.
Well, I never listened to that when people told me that.
No doubt.
But you need the support to get it through.
And,
you know, the other thing is maybe your district wasn't gerrymandered, but, you know, the district... that used to carry me when I was elected previously is now a new boss.
But that's because we changed it. They skipped it all over. We have a independent redistricting right now. We don't do them.
Kenny, and then Joe, and then we're going to wrap this up.
Thanks. You know, my biggest argument for an extension of a term from 2 years to 4 years is, and it's going to be tough for Dave to remember this, it was so long ago, you know, when you first get elected to the legislature, there's a steep learning curve. And there's a lot to learn, and I don't think
Is it counter to term limits then?
Hold on. And I don't think that 2 years is adequate to be able to learn, you know, 2 years, let's just assume you're governing for 2 years and not just 1 or 1.5 years until it's time to run again. But let's say, you know, 2 years. 2 years is not enough time to learn.
Remember,
2 years is not enough time to get your handle on the operation.
You remember what Dave told us? It was me, you, and Laura was there.
Yeah, exactly.
He said, keep your mouth shut for 6 months and you'll be all right.
Mm-hmm. I told you to keep your mouth shut and learn the players. That was my advice. Keep your mouth shut, learn the players, and get an understanding of what it is
obviously,
before you start talking out.
Obviously, you didn't tell that to Hefner and Joe there.
No, I didn't have that conversation with Joe or Hefner. But you know what? In your argument, Ken, to be honest with you, I'm still learning things about county government, and I've been here for 24 years, and I'm still learning things that I didn't realize, little minutia things that I didn't realize, and that it can help somebody out when they call me and you need advice.
It's always a learning curve, Dave.
So, I mean, hopefully I keep my mind open enough that I continue to learn.
Go ahead.
I'll just say this, and I hope I don't make anybody too mad because I really like this guy, but
I love you too, Joe.
At a public hearing a couple of months ago, I thought I was watching a term limit ad when we had a legislator Skyping from Florida. Missed quite a few meetings early in the year. Looked like he was having a good time and came back with a good tan. He Skyped in to tell us at a public hearing how unnecessary term limits were. If somebody from his or her district thought that maybe he was spending too much time in another state and then representing them, they would have had to go to that all Democratic district, so it would have had to be a primary, and they would have had to talk to that individual's brother about running against him.
So when you talk about term limits and maybe having a hard time breaking through and name recognition and all these things, sometimes I don't think the people do decide. I will say this: if I lived in your district, I would vote for you, even if you know.
Well,
you gotta kind of look at it sometimes.
That same legislator took 20 calls that week and got up on the phone for probably, I bet you, probably 60 hours. I'm not saying, I'm exaggerating 60 hours, probably about 20 hours.
And I believe it. That's not why you win, though, always.
But boy, you do your job.
Yeah. Well,
you know, it's about doing your job, representing your people. And that's why I Skyped in. Even though I was on vacation, I took no time to Skype in.
All in favor of 153?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, Dave?
Opposed.
Thank you, sir.
Jonathan?
I am also for... I'm a friend.
Sorry, I just... trying to get the whole picture. Sorry. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Okay, any new or old business?
Should we...
Pick a date?
Or should we... you want to consult the calendar and then via email we can discuss a date?
No, let's get it over with now.
Kyle.
You want to do April?
Laura.
April 30th?
I don't know who wrote that. Might have been Mary.
Huh? April 30th?
I got something going on that day. But
I'm not going to be around April 30th.
Do you want to keep it on a Monday?
No, you're all set.
Thank you. You know, I'd rather go into May.
I'm thinking about actually May 21st. That's after
meeting.
See you
later.
All right.
That'll work.
Okay.
I'm fine with May 21st.
Laura?
I mean, what do we have coming up? You know, if we don't have like an intensive amount of stuff.
Yeah.
Like this one here, we had a lot of...
We had a lot of...
A lot of stuff that requires talking on.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes we could. What do you think next month's going to be? What do you?
You have trails advisory across the hall starting at
6. I mean, what
climate smart in here at 7.
Now what about
21st?
What about what do we have for our meeting the next month?
That we
have an idea. Do we have any idea of anything coming in?
Resolutions haven't been put in yet.
I know that, but what do you think? I mean, do you have any?
Did you ask him?
Oh, all right. Hey,
Joe,
how many resolutions did you put in this month for us to deal with?
Somebody make a motion to adjourn and we'll
just go to the second rolls.
Second to adjourn. Heidi, second to adjourn. Two.
Everybody's in favor.
We tried to figure out if